Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for a discussion of Tombstone by everyone's Huckleberry, Mark Ahn.
Patrick, you're a sweet, soft Hungarian devil.
That's not even a reference to the movie, right? That's how you feel about me?
Yeah, that is. It's both, actually.
That is fantastic. We're going to be talking about Tombstone, the Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer Western, directed by George P. Cosmatos. Remember, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. You should like us on Facebook if you haven't. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. If you're a fan of the show, if you like the show, if you have any feelings about the show, please take the time to leave a review, a star rating, if you haven't already. Truly, 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 I appreciate those of you that have. I know it only takes a few seconds out of your day, but it's nice enough that you guys would take that time to leave a review and get us some more visibility. So I genuinely appreciate it. Only our past like 99 episodes are in the iTunes store. So if you want to find all 200 plus of our shows,
it's such a weird number,
right? It's supposed to be 100. And for some reason it's only ever 99. So I got 99 podcasts,
but a 100th one isn't one.
Okay. Yeah. But to find all of our past episodes, you got to go to fthismovie.net, where we are in the throes of Junesploitation, our second annual celebration of exploitation and genre movies. Every day we're watching a movie based on a different sort of exploitation theme. You don't have to watch an exploitation movie. There's like a day that's devoted to car movies. You can watch any car movie,
yeah,
Cannonball
car
Run,
movies.
Herbie Fully Loaded, whatever you, any movie that has a car in it, which is basically any movie.
Yeah, every movie.
So for 30 days in June, we're doing that. Go to fthismovie.net to participate in Junesploitation. Mark Ahn, have you seen
What's
anything
up?
Good lately?
I have. I've seen a couple things. You guys already talked about on various podcasts about Godzilla and X-Men Days of Future Past, and so I won't get into that much, but you guys should go check it out.
Did you like both or either?
Let's see. Short version, Godzilla was okay. I was okay with it.
All right.
I kind of liked the trailer better than the movie.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean the movie sucks. So Godzilla was okay. X-Men Days of Future Past, I had a lot of fun. I actually went to go see that with you.
Yeah, you did. That's why you had fun.
Well, yeah.
I'm a fun guy.
Exactly. And it was a good time. It was a lot of fun. But I think it was one of those movies that felt like if I thought too hard about how everything was put together, then it would lessen my enjoyment of it. So
yeah,
I think
I
deliberately tried to not think too hard about it.
Yeah.
And so instead I went back to the X-Men comics that I really like and like looked up those books and started reading those. And so it's been a nice little run back into nostalgia.
Nice.
So it's a good time.
Nice.
The one movie I actually do want to spend a little bit of time, just a little bit, of is a movie called Memories of a Murder.
Yes,
Memories of
I still haven't seen it. Son of a bitch.
So I wanted to see this because it's by director Bong Joon-ho,
yeah,
who is coming out with a movie.
Snowpiercer,
which I'm really excited about.
Me
I'm assuming
too.
Patrick is excited about it.
You're just rubbing
well.
It in that I haven't seen Memories of Murder.
I'm going to rub your face in some Memories of Murder.
You're rubbing my face in Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah, it's a circumcision movie. No, I'm just kidding. Let's see. So I was watching this because Snowpiercer is coming up, and I think it's getting released in August in this country.
Might
that we
be
live
July.
In.
I know it's playing at the Music Box. I think possibly in July.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, so July or August.
Boom.
If you're in the United
this
States.
This summer.
Don't know about you Canadians and Australians and Europeans. I don't know. Don't know what to tell you. So anyway, because of that, I was thinking about that. So I went to go revisit Memories of a Murder, which was great. One of our friends happened to have it on DVD. It's a really good time. I think it's not, it's more of a mystery. I think this movie might even be obscure for our audience even. It's more of like a whodunit detective trying to figure out kind of stuff. I think a lot of the Korean movies I tend to watch tend to be like the action thriller kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
crazy violence kind of stuff. But
I'm not interested in regular Korean problems.
Right.
Domestic issues.
Sure. Gas.
Romance.
Too
forget
much.
It. No. Forget
the,
it.
The air quality here.
I want to see gang takeovers.
Poor. Right. I want to see guys beating each other up with baseball bats.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I want to see people eating
can
octopi.
Openers. Yeah, can openers. I want incest accidentally.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you do? So this is a little bit different than that. It's not really a gangster movie. It's more of a police cop whodunit situation. And I think I watched it on the recommendation of one of our one of our readers, one of our members of our community. I forget who. So I would like to give credit, but I forgot. I'm sorry.
Good job.
And so, but yeah, it was awesome. Watch it within the last couple of weeks or so. Really, really good. So don't be like Patrick.
I really want to see
Go
it.
Go watch it.
I'm sorry.
Go watch it. It's going to be great.
I still don't love Mother.
Sure.
I think it's interesting, and I like that performance, but I don't love the movie like I do like The Host. You know, like The Host is really great.
The Host is one I
If you haven't
watched.
Seen The Host and you're a big fan of
Sorry,
Godzilla,
I haven't watched it.
Yeah. You should check out The Host. It's really, really good.
Okay.
Best giant monster movie, I would say, in a long time.
Nice.
All right, my turn?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to rattle through some because I've seen actually some new releases.
Sure.
I'll go oldest to most recent.
Got it.
These are all within the last year.
I'm writing
though.
All these down.
I finally saw People Like Us. I know. Thank goodness. What took you so long, Bromley? Which is the directorial debut of Alex Kurtzman. He of Kurtzman and Orsi, the shitheads of Hollywood right now. Orsi, of course, is making his directorial debut with Star Trek III. Kurtzman made his last year with this semi-autobiographical drama starring Chris Pine and Elizabeth Banks, where he finds out he has a half-sister.
Oh, that's right.
That he's supposed to deliver $150,000 to because their dad died, but he doesn't tell her who he is.
Do they own a zoo?
They don't own a zoo. Okay. That's a better movie.
Okay.
This movie is, like, fine. Like, it's fine. It's not offensive, except for when it is. I like the actors. Michelle Pfeiffer is in it. Mark Duplass has a really small role. Elizabeth Banks is almost, if not always, great. I really like her. Chris Pine, obviously, is a charismatic dude. It's just a weird movie, and I know it's kind of based on his own life, but I'm going to spoil it a little bit, everyone, and
spoilers,
I apologize. There's a scene late in the movie where they've grown really close, Elizabeth Banks and Chris Pine. She's a recovering addict. He tells her he is. They spend all this time together. He's doing it because he wants to get to know his sister, and he's debating whether or not to give her this money, and she's just thankful that this guy is being nice to her and helping her with her son. She's a single mom.
What could go wrong?
Right. Near the end of the movie, like, she puts the moves on him and basically says, like, I want you to stay. I want us to be together. And he has to say, like, no, I'm your brother. And it's this weird... The movie isn't prepared to deal with the awkwardness of that situation.
I'm not prepared to deal with the awkwardness of that situation.
Right, and they have to bring it up because everything has geared us towards that moment. Of course she thinks that they're falling in love. Like, that's the way that this whole thing has gone. So they have to address it. So I guess I give him credit for addressing it, and maybe it's because it's really what happened, because he had something like this actually happen to him.
Ooh.
But then by bringing it up and then not really dealing with the fallout, it just is like this really, it makes the whole movie weird.
Yeah.
And I didn't love the movie, but that's, honestly, maybe that's on me. I mean, the movie's unremarkable, but also I don't like, you know how I don't like movies about the wrong man innocently accused?
Yes.
I also don't like the movie about the guy who has the secret that he just can't tell. And then at the end, we know someone's going to find the secret and then get mad and maybe like try to get on a plane, and he has to chase him down to the airport and be like, no, don't leave, because when we started, it was this, but then I really did develop feelings or whatever.
I feel like those two kinds of movies that you just mentioned should just be made into one.
That's fine.
I will never see it.
You throw cancer in that movie, and I for sure will not see that movie.
Got it. Or like the Holocaust, perhaps.
Yeah. No, that's a say. I don't know how you would combine all those things.
I don't know.
But good job if you can.
Okay.
Then I saw Byzantium, which is the Neil Jordan
vampire movie? Okay.
From last year.
Oh, it's my favorite one with Strawberry Fields.
Exactly.
She's my favorite. Can you guys hear the air quotes? I hope so.
You don't like her, right?
Not at all.
Something.
I'm sure she's a lovely person.
No, Gemma Arterton we're talking about. I had the exact same feeling about her that you did, because between Strawberry Fields and Prince of Persia,
oh man,
I was not a fan.
Sure.
Of the Gemma Arterton, and then something happened right around Hansel and Gretel Witch
Hunters.
I don't
like where this is going.
Have you seen Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters?
I have.
That didn't turn you around?
I think I'm choosing to see that the enjoyment I had of that movie, which I did enjoy, it was fun, was not because of her. That's how I'm choosing to see it.
I don't know how to explain it. I did not love the movie Byzantium.
Sure.
With Gemma Arterton and Saoirse Ronan, and it's nobody's fault. I'm over it. Yeah, I'm over it. Neil Jordan made a vampire movie once before called Interview with the Vampire. I didn't love that movie either. So maybe I'm just not a fan of the Neil Jordan vampire movie. But I don't know what to tell you. I have no idea if Gemma Arterton is a good actress at all, and I don't give a shit because. Okay. I was able to get through the movie just by watching her for 2 hours. I was crushing on her pretty hard. She is a lovely, lovely woman. Movie didn't hold any interest for me.
Sure, but it was a movie crush. It was nice.
Yeah. Okay. And whatever. It was
a metaphorical long.
Then we get to the newer stuff. Finally caught up with Neighbors, which I hadn't seen for a few weeks.
Oh, just like Zac Efron. No one's seen Zac Efron for years.
Did you see Neighbors?
I didn't.
It's fine. I was excited about Neighbors because I'm a big fan of the Seth Rogen, and sure. He's an actor that can get me to see a movie just because he's in it. I thought the trailers looked funny, and there's a lot of funny stuff in it. There really is. Seth Rogen is funny. Rose Byrne is actually really funny. She's sort of an alt universe Gemma Arterton, or actually Gemma Arterton is probably an alt universe.
I feel like
Rose Byrne.
You're spreading this disease just to spite me.
No. I don't love Rose Byrne.
Sure.
She's fine. She's funny in the movie. She does a good job, but I wasn't crushing on her. Zac Efron is well cast and funny. I mean, everybody in it is funny, and I just don't know. Like, I laughed, but I just felt like it was so sloppy in a way that sort of the post Apatow movies sometimes get accused of being, where it was like scenes didn't really make sense from one to another. Characters were totally different from one scene to the next because they made a 4-hour movie that they cut down to 90 minutes. And as nice as it is to see a summer movie that's only 90 minutes long.
Yes.
It was really choppy and just kind of poorly constructed. Even though there's funny stuff in it, it felt like kind of a miss for me. I was disappointed.
Okay. Is it sort of a medium? It felt like I haven't seen it, obviously, but it felt like a medium-sized sort of adult movie. Is that would you say?
Yeah,
it's an
kind
adult
of
movie.
I mean, yeah, it's very much about the transition from like, hey, we're not in our 20s anymore. Yeah. Now we're grown-ups and we have a kid and responsibilities. And so I liked that aspect of it. A lot of the people in it were funny. There's some really, really funny moments, but it just felt, I don't know, choppy.
Sure.
Nicholas Stoller is the director, and he made Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which I just love.
Yes.
I think that movie's so great. And then he made Get Him to the Greek, which I love less. And then he made The 5-Year Engagement, which I really love less. And this was maybe a step up from that, but a disappointment.
Okay.
Then I saw both movies that opened this past weekend. One I won't really spend time on because I wrote a review of it at fthismovie.net. And that is A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Oh.
Speaking of sloppy and not as funny as it should be.
Yeah, it's not getting the reviews that I was kind of hoping that it was going to get.
No, it's getting horrible reviews.
That sucks. But I was so hopeful.
And I would accuse the reviews of being like they're just reviewing Seth MacFarlane and not
sure.
the movie.
Yeah.
But it's almost one in the same because he wrote the movie, directed the movie, and cast himself in the lead.
Yeah.
So if you're not a fan of Seth MacFarlane, you're going to have a hard time enjoying this movie.
So you're saying that JB is going to love this.
He did not love it. there's a couple funny things in it. I laughed more than I thought I would, but less than I wanted to.
Okay.
How's that?
Fair.
And if you want to know more, sure. You can visit my review at fthismovie.net. The last movie that I'll talk about, I don't want to spend too much time on only because the day that this podcast drops, yeah, that's a thing.
Dropping.
A review is going to run by Adam Risky, and that is Maleficent.
Maleficent.
So you should go to fthismovie.net and read Adam Risky's review. I will say, having read the review, he liked it way more than I did, and he didn't love it. he basically kind of says, like, it's okay, it's weird, I don't know who it's for, it's
sure.
not the worst. I really didn't like it. It really rubbed me the wrong way. It was like, it just is born out of six different kinds of cynicism. Like, hey, Wicked is a thing, let's do the same thing with Sleeping Beauty. And then it falls victim to that new thing where
I think you've called it creeping Nolanism before. Yeah. It's not that it's dark and gritty. It's that we have to engineer everything so that it has like an explanation that's sort of
sure
rooted in some kind of reality.
Is it so, Maleficent Begins?
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely Maleficent Begins. Okay. But it doesn't just tell like the untold story. It's not a prequel to Sleeping Beauty. Like it literally changes everything. Everything in the movie. No, that's not true. Not everything. But the major beats are totally different. So just make a different, I don't know, whatever. I don't understand what their purpose was. It seems like they reverse engineered the movie from the idea of why that headpiece that Maleficent wears in Sleeping Beauty,
how the it horns. Has
like
the two,
yeah, like that they kind of said, well, why are those horns there? I know, because she really does have horns, because she's formerly a fairy whose wings were cut off in a weird act of Disney date rape. And then she becomes this.
I love the term Disney date rape.
It.
I'm gonna use it tomorrow.
It's like, have you ever seen those magazine spreads? I don't know if it's a magazine that runs them or just a photographer that does it. Maybe once a year they take a picture of like famous actors or actresses dressed as the live action versions of Disney characters.
Yeah. Like there's a series. Yeah. I saw
right.
Them,
like
yeah.
Beyonce is Snow cool. White yeah, or sure. whatever. Yeah. yeah. They should have just done that. They should have just taken a picture of Angelina Jolie in the Maleficent costume and just saved themselves hundreds of millions of dollars, because that's essentially the only premise for the movie. Is like, hey, she looks good in this costume. She looks like the drawing in the movie.
With her razor sharp cheekbones.
Right. So let's just turn that into a movie, because there's not enough to support it. It's a lot of just filmed storyboards, sort of. Like, how many shots of her against a moonlit backdrop can we see? I did not like or connect with a single moment of this movie. And this is coming from a guy who really likes Snow White and the Huntsman. So there.
So there.
So I am theoretically the audience for Maleficent. And boy, I did not like it.
Sorry, man.
That's all right.
Brief follow-up question.
So what up?
You get to stop talking about Maleficent. 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 I'm going to stumble over that every time. Back to the vampire movie.
Yeah.
Did you see Last Lovers Left
Alive?
Only
Lovers Left Alive. I've not seen yet.
That looks I'm not into vampire movies.
Yeah.
But that looks kind of cool.
I really want to see it. Just, if nothing else, as the new Jim Jarmusch movie.
Yeah, that looks really, really cool.
People love it or hate it, which is weird, right? Because people hardly ever have polarizing reactions to movies anymore.
Especially on the internet. That never happens.
I've talked to a few people that did not like it at all, and then I've read reviews of people that say it's like the best vampire movie in a long time.
I don't think I care whether it's a great vampire movie or not. Right. I think it looks really interesting. I think even if it sucks, I would want to watch it.
That's one of those things where it's like, hey, this is the new Jim Jarmusch movie. Whether or not it sucks, we should see it. You know, like he's done enough that, and he's an interesting enough filmmaker that he deserves our attention.
Agree.
So. Do you want to talk about Maleficent some more?
I have
some more thoughts.
No.
Is it like, Charlton
is it like,
Copley
is it like,
it?
Oh,
guess what? He's terrible.
Oh, really? Is he yelling a lot?
He's not yelling.
Does he seem like a person with a mental disease?
Because no,
that's what he has seemed like in the last couple of movies.
He just seems like a terrible actor.
I know.
Angelina Jolie gets to yell sometimes.
Oh, that's
She's
good.
Either like doing her sort of Quaalude, like, then you should be afraid. Like, sort of that voice. Or she's just shouting, like, ah! Come fairy spirit. She never says come fairy spirit, but
Disney date rape.
She says Disney date rape. It's the weirdest scene. I don't want to spoil it. She's in love with this guy, and he drugs her, knocks her out, and cuts off her wings. And she wakes up and realizes her wings have been taken and feels betrayed and violated, and it's an awful scene, and there's only one way to read it, and what it's doing in this movie I cannot understand.
Okay.
It's a garbage movie.
But she has the horns. has the helmet.
The movie that so far this summer that I've liked the most is X-Men Days of Future Past. Who saw that coming?
Nice. But more you liked it better than Captain America? I'm just curious.
Well, Captain America came out in like April.
Oh, okay. I counted it as the summer.
Yeah, for me,
not because of the month,
summer
just because of the season.
Kicked off with like Amazing Spider-Man 2,
Got
which
it.
I loved. Everyone, Edge of Tomorrow comes out this weekend, getting great reviews.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. Even though it looks like a lot of the Tom Cruise
don't care
stuff. Yeah,
I'm in.
Emily Blunt, isn't it?
Yeah,
which is great. I'm
great.
Big fan. Big fan.
Yeah. She's almost as good as that Gemma Arterton character.
Oh, Gemma Arterton.
You want to talk about Tombstone?
I guess we have to. At this
All point. Right. Listen, people love Tombstone. People love Tombstone. I like Tombstone, but I also think Tombstone's kind of a bad movie. Now, does that matter? Does it matter if it's bad if I like
think
it?
So, yeah.
What matters is that I like it, right?
Absolutely.
I find it incredibly watchable.
Yes.
It has an amazing cast where you could watch Tombstone every 5 years and be like, holy shit.
Look how loaded this is.
That guy became somebody. And if you watched it 10 years ago, you couldn't even appreciate all of the people that were in it because some of them hadn't like popped yet.
Yeah.
And then some of them have come and gone, like Jason Priestley, who was kind of stunt casting at the time and now, you know,
right,
isn't doing much. It has Kurt Russell. The Kurt Russell rule dictates that Kurt Russell rules.
Yes.
And Kurt Russell does indeed rule. For me, it's a lot of shouting and people in funny mustaches. And that's as reductive as I can possibly be
very,
about Tombstone.
It's very authentic facial hair, though.
Sure.
It's for sure for real. Random thing. Kurt Russell looks like he's like 100 pounds less than he normally is.
Really?
He looks really skinny in this
Maybe
movie.
It's because that... The size of his mustache,
that's true,
is distorting the actual size of his head. Looks tiny
reduces
compared to his giant mustache.
Reduces his body mass.
Yeah.
Okay, that is a giant mustache.
Yeah.
I have a weird, it's not weird. I have a deep, like, personal history with this movie, which
Great.
Doesn't make any sense.
Let's start there.
Okay. All right. It starts when I was a young
kidnapped
young,
boy.
Stop. No one needs to know about that. It's not like I don't want that on the internet all over the place. That'd be terrible.
You don't want that voted
no.
as everyone's favorite moment
unlike
on
someone's
this
podcast.
Show.
That'd be so strange. So I got whatever when I was younger would read
you got
a bunch of yeah Disney Day Rape. I would read. I'll go to the library and read like all the biographies of like whatever because I think when you're school age, you just kind of. That's sort of what you gravitate towards sometimes because you're like, oh, here are famous people and it's whatever. And I was a kid who read. And then one of the biographies that I sort of gravitated toward was like all these old West, you know, these figures from the old West. So Wyatt Earp, Wild Bill Hickok. And so I found that really interesting. And even as a kid, I read all these books about Wyatt Earp and I was like, oh, well, this is an interesting guy, that kind of thing. Obviously, these are not like super historically accurate kinds of books necessarily. It's just books for kids. And so a lot of it is fictionalized. So I read a whole bunch of that other stuff. And by the way, this Wyatt Earp is not the only person who suffers from this from my childhood. Like there's Robin Hood, I have this whole history with, like whatever, all this stuff.
If you're interested in knowing the origin of Robin Hood, Ridley Scott made a terrific
he did.
Prequel.
Oh my
Very
god.
Very gritty.
That movie sucks.
I don't even hate that movie, by the way.
I so
for the record,
hate that movie.
I need to see it again.
I hate what it did. I hate how a Disney date raped my childhood. I really hate it. I'm sorry. I broke my promise. I said I was going to use that word tomorrow. Okay. So like I knew sort of all this random stuff about Wyatt Earp. And then there was a period of time where like Tombstone came out. And then also Kevin Costner's Wyatt Earp, which we'll talk about later, I think. And so when Tombstone came out, I was super excited.
Yeah, me too.
I was like, I know all these people. Like I know these characters. I know who these people are supposed to be and whatever. All this stuff. I'm glad that we are the ones that did the Braveheart podcast with you because I felt like all these like random connections between Braveheart and this movie. And I know that makes no sense, but I'm going to explain it in the sense that like in my head at a certain point in my life, I categorized both of these movies in the same way that these were sort of like movies about dudes and like dudes doing things that dudes do. You know, like you among them being you fight for your country / woman / family. And it's just like you only hang out with other guys. And then women are just these sort of ancillary kind of things to your life because you're just all wrapped up in doing whatever you want to do. And so I remember, and like, I think Braveheart, it's funny because Braveheart and Tombstone came out in the same year or like within a year of each other or something like that.
Okay.
And so during college, this was a movie that my friends and I would rally around all the time. And just on a night where we had nothing else to do, we would sit and watch the entire thing. And I would be the guy that would say every line in the movie because we all know that people. We all know those people. And I remember getting to like with my group of friends, like I got into an argument with one of my friends and we never got into any other fight about anything else, except he just turned to me and said, "On, shut up so I can watch this." because I was saying every single line under my breath, but kind of just to come back to what you were saying, that it's such a fun and like enjoyable, and I think part of it for me was like it's so Doc Holliday especially is so quotable,
yeah,
all over the place,
yeah.
Sorry, you were. But that's just sort of my personal hit. Like, I'm super invested in Tombstone, so I feel like I can't. It's hard for me to objectively watch this. I just got done watching it, and I felt like all my objectivity just like sort of
okay.
just went away. It didn't matter. I was just back to being like a younger version of myself, just enjoying like whatever. I don't care. It's cowboys and stuff.
Well, that's kind of the movie. I mean, I don't think you can watch it on many other levels, and I feel like I'm holding it to probably too high a standard. Like, I want it to be a masterpiece, and sure. it isn't. It's like a movie, you know. It's not yeah. a film, it's a movie, if you're a person who makes that distinction.
Sure.
I know it gets talked about as like a lot of people's one of their favorite westerns, yeah. and that's a little shocking to me, only because I don't love it that much. Like, every time I see it, and I saw it, you know, the weekend it opened, and I've watched it probably once every 2 years or sure. once every year since then, I always enjoy it. I find it very entertaining. I also find it, like, kind of dumb.
Yeah, it's really dumb.
I know, and I don't want it to be. You know what I mean? Like, I keep thinking, like, no, this time it's not going to be
no, but it's,
as
it's,
dumb. Kurt Russell is not going to deflect Curly Bill's bullets by the power of yelling no.
Oh, that's one of my favorite parts.
That is such a dumb scene.
It is super dumb. It's also, but it's not the kind of dumb that's just, like, dumb and just accepts the fact that it's dumb.
Right.
It's like dumb trying to be
exactly. That's
a little
the thing.
Smart.
Right. But then there's stuff in it that's so great. I mean, even the dumb stuff is fine and entertaining, although I did find myself wishing that I could kind of fast forward any scene with Dana Delaney
yes,
on this
agree.
Most recent rewatch. And agree. that was a huge miscalculation, I think, to include any of that stuff because
sure.
A, it's boring when it shouldn't be.
Right.
B, her performance, and she's a fine actress. I haven't seen her in a ton of stuff, but I don't think her performance works in the movie at all.
Sure.
And I feel like it confuses the character of Wyatt Earp a
right.
lot. And the movie isn't necessarily trying to present him as a complicated man. I don't think. Maybe they are.
I don't think so.
The Kasdan movie, I think, does a much better job of suggesting
yeah.
that he's a lot of different things, including a prick.
Yeah. But that's Wyatt Earp origins.
when this movie makes him a prick, I feel like it's by accident. Like, they weren't going for prick, but they stumbled upon prick.
Sure.
The scene where he kicks Billy Bob Thornton out of the bar. It's like right when he arrives
yeah.
in Tombstone. Billy Bob Thornton is a piece of shit, and he is a piece of shit in this movie too. Ha! See what I did? You burnt Billy Bob. So he's a piece of shit, and he's been terrorizing this bar, and he's a criminal and a thug, and so, like, yeah, he deserves to be smacked around. But it gets to a point in that scene where I'm just like, Jesus,
yeah.
Wyatt Earp, you're just being a bully.
Yeah. He's had enough.
He's
that's,
really just out to yeah. humiliate him, and that to me is where he crosses over into prick, just for being the sake of being prick.
Right. But it's awesome and acceptable because of this, in my head, this Braveheart corollary
yeah.
of like where you have your hero,
right,
and he's fully formed and can do nothing wrong.
Right.
Like he, because I was, again, this is one of those things where, like, just rewatching it, what I hadn't thought about or noticed before was that we're introduced to him, like, in the middle of him just being who he is. He just gets off the train and, like, whatever, and he's just Wyatt Earp forever. Like, he doesn't necessarily
that's
change
what the movie should have been called.
All that Wyatt Earp forever.
Yeah, Joel Schumacher could have
done it. I know. He could have nipples on his whatever jacket.
Hat.
Gun. Mustache.
This
is my nipple mustache, everyone. This is why I look 100 pounds lighter. No, but he's just fully formed, and so it's just like, well, he's Wyatt Earp, and he's supposed to be awesome. So, yeah, he can, like, slap around this, like, poor sap, and it doesn't matter.
Well, but the movie tries to give him, like, dimension and a flaw by having him kind of fall in love with the Dana Delaney character
yeah.
while still married to the Dana Wheeler Nicholson character, who the movie goes out of its way to make a monster. And
right.
listen, she may have been that in real life.
Sure.
I don't know. I didn't read all the biographies you did when you
Look,
were a kid.
I was 11 years old, and I knew it better than you did.
Yeah,
deal with that.
For sure.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk Universal Monsters at age 11, I
okay.
got you. I
oh,
got
okay.
you. she is a drug addict and an alcoholic. She won't get out of bed. She's right. always mean to him. So it's like, well, we can't really blame Wyatt Earp for falling right. in love with the pretty actress who's nice to him and just wants room service. All that shit that's falls flat.
It's so awful.
And the movie ends on that note. The structure of this movie.
And we'll order room service.
Is disastrous. I don't understand the structure. Sometimes I watch it and I think like, oh, they're just being sort of counterintuitive in an interesting way, like the OK Corral happens about halfway through, a little bit more.
Sure.
Curly Bill is dispatched before the end of the movie.
Right.
And then sometimes I think it's because, no, they figured out that Val Kilmer is stealing this movie, and so they just
went with it.
The more interesting character, the final shootout.
Yeah.
But then it's still not over because we have the crazy montage. Like, this movie climaxes in a montage of them riding horses and shooting guys.
Yeah.
And then it ends with him dancing with Dana Delaney in the street. Those two things could not be more tonally different.
Yeah.
And that to me is a problem.
But I loved the montage. I'm not gonna lie. I like
the montage is fine.
I love it.
It doesn't belong as the finale of your movie.
Not at all.
No.
By the way, all the rest of the guys that these guys had to kill, you don't know their names, so right? we're just gonna speed it up. It's
fine. they just ride around and shoot people.
You know, there's that cool. Like, no, and I was thinking, I'm like, I shouldn't like
for the second time. By the way, it's the second shooting people montage.
Right. Because it's
right.
It's,
isn't there one before that?
Yeah.
I thought there was one before that.
Right. It's because they stopped montaging because Doc got sick.
Yeah. Right.
And then they were can we montage
hold,
now again?
All right.
Okay. Let's go.
Pick it up.
No, but I love that even in the midst of it, I was like, this is so stupid. But that the shot of Ike Clanton where they're all chasing him down, and then it's in slow mo, and then he turns around and he just throws the scarf behind him. I'm like, that's such a cool looking shot.
Sure.
I still kind of love it.
But the movie stops just so it can do that shot.
Like, right, that's true.
That shot has no equivalent in the rest of the movie.
Right.
It's like somebody decided, ooh, wouldn't that be cool? And even though it's inconsistent with the rest of the movie, yeah, it's fine. It's cool. Here's something interesting. By the way, I'm going to rip on Tombstone a lot. I still like Tombstone.
That's
it's
fine.
On TNT all
We're,
the time.
Yeah.
I will always watch it.
Every time. 20 minutes at least.
Yeah. This is a movie that men specifically rally around. Women love it too. I'm not saying like it's only for men, but this is one of those movies where like I would be made fun of if I said I didn't like it by other
college
men.
Age me would really hate myself.
So here's the thing, and I don't know how much of this is true.
Okay.
What I have always heard.
Lay it on me.
Is that George Cosmatos, who directed this movie as well as Rambo First Blood Part 2 and Cobra.
I did see that.
If you want a bit of his filmography. Was very sick when it came time to make this movie.
Okay.
Kurt Russell basically said, George, you show up on set. You call action. I'm going to direct the movie. And Kurt Russell essentially directed Tombstone. That Cosmatos is just kind of a figurehead, a name on the director's chair, but Kurt Russell was calling the shots.
That's what I heard as well.
And if you watch it with that, now, and supposedly there's a longer cut somewhere too, but I don't know if we're ever going to see it. That surprises me. I think an extended version came out on DVD. It's not on the Blu-ray. I've never seen the extended version.
I haven't seen the extended version, but I did read somewhere that they had to cut down the movie because the original script was like crazy, crazy long and went into subplots and of every smaller character. And
I
so,
think it, and you get a sense of that because the whole like Jason Priestley, Billy Zane, all that stuff, you kind of wonder, why is it in this movie?
What is happening there?
I think by fleshing some of it out, I actually think it might have been a better movie, a longer version that inhabits this world a little bit more fully. Might make for a better movie.
Sure.
I think it would probably be way less entertaining. And that's the thing. I watch Wyatt Earp, and I don't hate Wyatt Earp. I need to see it again, the cast in movie. I need to see it again, but I remember seeing it and liking it and feeling like, as a movie, it was better than Tombstone.
Sure.
That's a bold statement, and I could be wrong because I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember feeling like, as a movie, it was better, but that I was probably never going to watch it again, and I would only watch Tombstone because Tombstone is like the greatest hits.
Right,
Tombstone is wall-to-wall awesomeness.
It's dessert.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so great.
Yeah, Wyatt Earp like feels like work, and Tombstone is just cookies and cake.
When's the last time that you saw Wyatt Earp?
It's 10 years.
So as an adult, basically.
Yeah.
The one and only time I watched it was whenever it opened, and so I was a kid, I was in high school, you know, something like that. And I remember being really disappointed. But I think most of my disappointment was fueled by the fact that I really loved Tombstone.
Yeah.
And so I just remember, and I do actually kind of want to rewatch it just because it's been so long. But my memory of it is just that it was just sort of slow and like,
I think it probably
dark
is.
And yeah. moody. Yeah. And I thought, there is no, and again, this is high school. This is me trying to remember back to high school, but it just seems so dark, and I was like, there's no joy in any of this.
No.
I'm not having a good time.
And I remember feeling like, as a character study, it was more interesting.
Sure.
But again, Tombstone is like yeah. way more fun.
Right.
And you can't watch Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid is fine as Doc Holliday sure. in that movie, but
right.
poor
there's
guy.
Just, yeah.
he never stood yeah. a chance. So let's talk about Val Kilmer.
Oh, Val Kilmer. He does all the cool Val Kilmer things that he does in all the movies that he's in. He does the thing with the coin flip on yeah. the knuckles. He gets all the best lines. He I don't know, man. He like he even looks, this is going to sound really stupid, but he looks cool like shooting a gun.
I feel like this is the movie that made Val Kilmer Val Kilmer. Like, I know he had done stuff and we all liked him in Real Genius and Top Gun and Willow and whatever. Like, he'd acted in a bunch sure. of stuff. But in terms of being both a respected actor and a guy that sort of movie fans, people like you and me, a guy that we really love, this was the movie that was yeah. like, this was Robert Downey Jr. doing Iron Man. You
sure.
know, this was like, holy shit, right. Val Kilmer
so cool.
is the coolest.
Right.
And even when stuff in the movie doesn't work, and there's plenty of it, Val Kilmer is always like the big gulp in the desert.
Yes.
No matter how bad things yes. get, that dude,
what's he doing?
Saves every single moment and scene that he is in.
And you buy it. Yeah. There's a lot of and just where we were talking earlier about how they try to flesh out a lot of the characters, not just the main ones. But you get that sense of, and it works sometimes and it doesn't work sometimes. Like the first confrontation with, by the way, everybody, we're going to spoil this movie because it's like, however, 20 years old.
However. Surely you've seen it.
Yeah, hopefully you've seen it.
If you have basic cable.
And you have it, like, come on. Just come over to my house. I'll undo the DVD. It's fine. and there's the first scene with Ringo, Johnny Ringo, and Michael Biehn's in this movie, by the way, everybody. That's great.
Playing it to the cheap seats.
Yeah, you can see all of his eyeballs every yeah. time. So Johnny Ringo and then Doc Holliday sort of face off in the casino
and
kind of
speak
for the first
Latin
time.
To each other.
Yeah, and
they have a Latin off,
right? Which is so stupid because it's like they're like apparently he's an educated man or whatever that whole thing, and it's like who cares? Like what? But then you're like, oh, Doc's educated, and you just buy into
no,
it.
No, everything
you're
about like, him is like yeah. even the fact that he's dying makes him the coolest.
Right, that he's Southern.
He's
and then,
so like the Han Solo of this movie.
And there's so many, I was just thinking about the dialogue, because there's some like real clunk. There's some great ones that Kilmer gets, but there's some real clunkers that he has to say.
Yes.
Where he talks about, it's after like the big, stupid gunfight where Wyatt Earp doesn't get shot
Which
at all.
One? Oh, the no?
The no. Which, it's like, why is he saying no? I don't know why he's saying no. I don't know.
I don't know.
I never thought about that.
To stop the bullets, apparently. Just, no, you can't
it's
shoot
science.
Me.
It's
no.
Sonic interference with the shotgun bullets. And then so after that, and then the guys are afterwards like, I never saw anything like that, you know. And then they say something about like, oh, just... I forgot what the line is. It's the one that says, it's like, it's the reckoning.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this line.
I'm always like, what the hell does that mean?
I don't
know what that means.
I watched this movie last night, and I had the exact same, they said something about revenge. Like, oh, I hope he never wants revenge. Oh, no, if somebody killed my brothers, I'd want revenge too. And Doc Holliday says, it's not revenge, he's after, it's a reckoning.
and then, understandably, both characters are there, look at each other
yeah.
like,
well, he is dying, so let's just let that one pass.
And then they just...
Because I don't understand that line.
No one understands
it. It's a stupid line.
I don't get it.
That sounds badass.
Yeah.
It has the feel of like a cool badass line that is meaningless, and this movie has a lot of those. It
right,
really
like,
wants to drive home those moments.
Yeah, the urban philosopher, Doc Holliday. He gets another, what's the other one that was a real clunker? It's the one where he's dying at Charlton Heston's ranch in bed. And then,
by the way, that is not the time for Charlton Heston to appear in your movie. Like, the movie's almost over, and now I'm distracted because
yeah.
fucking Chuck Heston
I didn't,
just showed
I
up.
I didn't care, though. I was like, Charlton Heston!
No,
Moses!
Earlier.
Moses!
Bring him out earlier.
And so, Moses! So there, and so Wyatt and Doc Holliday are talking, and he's saying, I know what I want to do with my life, and what makes Johnny Ringo do all this stuff. Like, he just keeps killing. And then urban philosopher Holliday goes on this rant of like, oh, you know, it's for all this other stuff. There's not enough killing. There's not enough pain. And then it's like, what? And then Wyatt Earp sets him up in the script. Yeah. It's so great. Why he does he do that? And
he wants revenge.
He wants revenge for being born. I don't know what I'm like. I kind of know what that means, but like, okay. And here's the best part: they don't like cut the scene there.
No,
they just keep going.
No, well, that's I didn't mind that line as much as you because I thought that was an interesting idea that somebody's filled with so much anger and hate at just having to exist that they take it out on everyone else. Like that's kind of interesting, but. What the movie doesn't earn is Wyatt Earp's 15-second confused / horrified reaction shot.
Right.
That goes on for way too long. Like, being born, fine, cut.
And then he just, like, brings up a totally different topic as his next line. So anyway, can I beat Johnny Ringo, by the way?
I will say, though, Val Kilmer has so good. A lot of, obviously, the movie's best lines. And one of the lines that he has, I really like his last scene with Kurt Russell, I think.
Yes, I like that.
He really sells that moment. And that's hard. You know, actors have to play dying all the time, and most of them are terrible at it. But Doc Holliday's so good. When he says, Wyatt Earp is my friend, and they all go, I got a lot of friends. He goes, I don't.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, that every time that works for me. And I know it's coming, and still when he says, I don't, I'm just like, I love you, Doc Holliday.
You're my friend.
You're the best. My friend.
Especially because I thought about all the other stuff when he uses the word friend.
Yeah.
This is reading way too deeply into this silly of a movie sometimes. But right when we're introduced to Doc Holliday, he's playing poker with that with the guy with the terrible hat, which is, by the way, the shorthand in cowboy movies of this sort. Like, the cool guys have the cool hats. Like, the douches have, like, douche hats. And so he asks the guys, Ed Begley, are we not friends? And then he's tapping his gun and doing that whole thing. I love it. It's the best.
I don't quite understand. We're jumping all over the place.
It's fine.
You know, the shootout with Johnny Ringo at the end is actually pretty cool. And we know who's going to win, but it's still, he does a good job of kind of drawing out the tension. And then Johnny Ringo gets shot in the head and doesn't die right away. And that's interesting. Like, you don't see that in a movie very often, where a guy's shot in the head and then kind of stumbles around. And
well, he just grazed him, obviously.
So it's like death is kind of long and ugly. It's not just this quick, clean thing that it is in a lot of the movie. And that's interesting. But then I also don't understand how Doc Holliday goes right from, like, I'm Mr. Cool and Relaxed.
Sure.
To then he shoots Johnny Ringo, and then all of a sudden he just starts going like, come on, come on. Like, what? Where did this come from? What? It's like those two moments, like, we're missing the middle piece.
Sure. I think he was drawing upon his gambler rage.
Okay.
And he was taunting him. Maybe the effects of the nicotine of the cigarette he was smoking wore off because 60% of his lung tissue is gone.
Again, not the worst thing in the movie. Just a weird... It's like I'm with that beat because I'm like, oh, wow, I haven't seen that in a movie. And then, wait, what? Why is Doc Holliday acting the way
why
he
are you
is?
Taunting him?
The movie is constantly yanking me around like that.
Although they do have that. One of my favorite moments from the movie is earlier when Johnny Ringo challenges the Earps. Like, they're all just walking down the street and whatever. And Doc's just on the side, like, about to get a haircut or a shave or something. I don't know. And then the Earps all, like, refuse to fight Johnny. And then he's like, oh, don't any of you want to play for blood? And then he says that I'm your Huckleberry, which is a legendary line. I love that scene. It's just the way that it's shot. Like, he's just silhouetted against the door, and then he's got his hand behind his back, very obviously holding a pistol. This is one of my favorites. So I think it's I don't know. I guess you can see it as a continuation of whatever that was going on over there just initially. So
there's again, if you look at it from the perspective of, like, Kurt Russell ghost directed this movie, and it's obviously then his first time and only time, I guess, directing, a lot of the choices make sense and you sort of understand why it has the flaws that it has.
Sure.
Like, he's not maybe able to connect all the dots, but he's able to go for moments and iconography, and there's some kind of hero worship stuff, and he has all these different things that he wants to do, and a really great filmmaker would be able to sort of seamlessly blend all of that, and Kurt Russell, you know, isn't there yet. So you get a movie that's filled with cool shit and great moments that's sort of patched together with a lot of weird clunky stuff.
Yeah. I think you see some evidence of that with the acting, because what I always find funny is that whenever I rewatch this is that all the actors are doing like exactly what you expect that actor would do, right? Bill Paxton's doing his Bill Paxton thing, you know.
You know he's doomed just by virtue of the fact that he's like Bill Paxton.
They're just kind of... Charlton Heston shows up with a deep voice and says, like, sort of sensible things.
Right.
Kurt Russell is, like, channeling all of his, like, action hero. I actually caught part of The Thing the other night, which is awesome. But, like, that sort of action hero, I'm going to get this done kind of thing. Really, the interesting performance is Kilmer's, I think. I think the rest are all kind of, like... I'm playing a stereotype. I'm playing sort of a...
Kilmer creates an actual character.
Sure.
And everybody else kind of...
Yeah. Is. Can we go back to Dana Delaney? I'm going to say something really mean.
By the way, that sentence never uttered on the podcast before. Can we go back to Dana Delaney?
Can we go back to Dana Delaney? I should remember, mix up the... Can we go back to Dana Delaney? Part of the reason why her storyline's just kind of clunky for
doesn't me. Work
yeah but I think what also doesn't make it work is that I just don't buy that she's attractive.
Well, listen,
I buy that she's is... what doesn't make, and I don't just mean like whether she's pretty or whatever.
If it had been Gemma Arterton, we'd be having a different conversation.
This is a fist fight is what it would be. I would be stabbing you in the head with that pen on the table right now. And I think part of the reason why I can't, it doesn't play for me, is just I'm like, look, you're falling in love with someone who's not that attractive. I'm sorry, she's just not attractive. I don't know what to do.
The thing is, she
just seems flighty and ditzy and unstable. Well, watch out.
She's an actress, right? And she represents this other thing. And I could understand again why, when Wyatt Earp's life is miserable, he would be drawn to this. Oh, you're an outsider.
Sure,
you represent a different life. That's, you know, because he's trying to get away from violence and the law and his awful shrew of a wife. I could see why she would represent the potential for something else. But to then have him be like, I love her, and to sit down next to Doc Hollywood. And say, hey, fix my fence, or you can't go back to Beverly Hills. For him to sit next to Doc Holliday and be like, I know who I want to be with now.
Really?
And then it becomes this love story. And according to the epilogue, like, they were together for 50 years or something. And if that's true and this is all part of the real story, then great. And I guess that's why it has to be in the movie. But I don't buy it, because again, she's not a person, and Dana Delaney to me seems like she's acting in a high school play. Like, I have the costume and I've been told that I'm old-timey actress, so that's what I'm doing. And just the scene where, for Wyatt Earp, the Wyatt Earp that is presented in this movie is not the guy who sits down next to his best friend and is like, I know who I want to be with.
He's the guy that slaps people around.
Right,
is what he does.
And I don't need to see him slap anybody around, but like, he needs to suffer in silence and make that decision quietly, and then go to her and be all weird and awkward because he can't express his emotions, because that's who he is. Not dance with her in the street
unless
as it snows. And then the fucking last line of the movie, what's the last line of the movie?
And we'll order room service.
Oh, no, narration. What's the last line of two? Every time I see it, I go, holy shit.
He wept.
Tom Mix wept. Is that like a Jesus wept thing? Like,
I don't know.
This movie ends with the line, Tom Mix wept.
Okay.
Like, monkeys have a better chance of typing Hamlet than they do of coming up with the last line, Tom Mix wept, as the last line of The Legend of Wyatt Earp.
Yeah. And Robert Mitchum narrates it. Right?
It's just the weirdest last line.
It is a weird line.
Bizarre. Whatever.
It's all beside the point. It's all Dana Delaney. If you're listening to this podcast, yes, I'm really sorry. By the way,
she does. She's a regular.
She is gonna.
She has one scene that I kind of like.
Is it the one with the horses?
Don't they all have horses?
No. No, the one where they like randomly rendezvous out in the woods, and then it's like,
fuck,
oh
no,
careful,
it's not that scene.
It's in heat. Oh, how do they know? I'm like,
I don't think any of the Priestley Billy Zane stuff works. It's hinted. Are we meant to assume that Jason Priestley has like a homosexual crush?
I don't think it's hinted that it's gay. I think he's pretty gay.
Just flat out.
Just real gay.
I don't know. Maybe that's the thing that got cut.
Whatever. That's fine.
That Priestley is?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
I mean, that's the way I've always read it. But it never says it.
Right.
So I always read it as he's in love with this guy, but he can't say anything about it because it's the Old West and that kind of thing is not accepted.
Right.
That's interesting to me that Billy Zane represents this different kind of masculinity.
Sure.
One that Jason Priestley finds himself drawn to but can't do anything about it. And Billy Zane has a supremely punchable face. And so, especially in this movie where he just looks so just smug and arrogant.
And he has a lace collar.
Yeah, he's just awful. Oh, but he's fine, whatever. So when he's murdered and Dana Delaney has that speech about like, he was beautiful.
Yeah.
Not like all of you assholes. Like, that is an interesting scene to me. I don't think it works because we haven't really invested in the Billy Zane character and Dana Delaney's trying to sell it like she's in a high school play. But it's an interesting contrast. It's really the only time in the movie where someone says, like, what you guys are doing is savage and stupid.
Sure.
It's because for the rest of the movie, we're caught up in that same sort of bloodlust mentality where we're like, yeah, shoot each other. This is awesome. This is fun. And the movie goes right back to that. And we're like, yeah, it's a reckoning. Okay, great. Let's watch some more people get shot. It's the only time in the movie where someone steps out and says, no, this is dumb. There's another way, a more evolved way that you could all be. That's interesting. And something that the movie probably could have explored more if it wanted to be about something more than just Wyatt Earp is awesome and cowboys.
Yeah. And then Wyatt Earp momentarily thinks that he might not be awesome.
But
then he realizes, wait, hold on, everyone. I actually am awesome.
Yeah. You have to clarify something for me too, but go ahead.
Okay. I forgot what I was going to say. I think the thing, I like the earlier scenes where they're sort of setting everything up. Just in the same way that all the characters are sort of caricatures and stereotypes, that like the town itself is also a stereotype as well. Like everything's called like the Grand Hotel. Well, of course, and that's fine. I'm sure that some of that's historically based, but I like that scene in the first one where we get to meet the actors, where they're doing the stage work. There's the stage play or whatever it is that they're presenting. Cause I think it pushes all that violence, kind of what you were talking about, all the violence of the cowboys, in the middle of like normal life. Cause it's this weird thing where like you get the ground shot of all these like rowdies, like sitting and like drinking and shooting stuff. And then it like cranes up and then it's like all these like normal people up in the boxes. It's like, I think it's kind of interesting that it was just sort of tolerated. Like these are the street thugs that live in our neighborhood. You just kind of deal with it, and they're going to shoot at the actors and whatever. You just got to.
And there's a suggestion periodically throughout the movie that this way is dying out.
Sure.
That this is sort of the last gasp of this kind of crazy, lawless, wild, wild west, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the movie spends so much time reveling in that part of it that it never really says anything about that or has a point of view on it other than like, it was cool when people shot guns and killed each other. By the way, I agree with them. That's the best shit in the movie. Yeah,
it kind of is. Okay, what was your clarification?
I still just don't understand when Doc Holliday shoots Johnny Ringo at the end and then he throws the badge on his chest and then Wyatt Earp shows up. And then he says something about the limits of his hypocrisy. There's a lot of unspoken and what it's legal when he shot him.
Cause like he faked it.
Cause and he so was that's deputized.
I think he's saying, what's the line? My hypocrisy only goes so far.
Right.
I think he stole or like he got the badge from Wyatt. And then that's the way that he, so it's a manipulation. It's a subterfuge because he used that to like goad Johnny Ringo into the fight, maybe.
Okay. I thought Wyatt gave him the badge, didn't he?
He did, but just as a present, like you're a deputy.
Got it.
You asshole.
You were just supposed to hold it, man.
Right. Right. It's like if you lent me your car and I was like,
you used it to run someone over. Right. I'm like, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Oh, wait. That's not why you gave me the car? Oh, okay. All right, I guess that makes sense. I mean, so I think that's the subtext.
I guess that makes
that
sense.
Isn't so subtext-y.
I guess.
What was something else I wanted to talk about? I love Sam Waterston because he's doing Sam Waterston things because that's just what he does. Sam Elliott, I'm sorry. Yeah. Did I say Sam Waterston?
You did.
Oh my God, I'm
sorry.
It's
okay. It's all right.
I'm sorry, Sam Waterston as well. and Dan Delaney. I have so many people mad at me. It's okay. I got kidnapped, guys.
I'm almost positive that Sam Elliott was just playing himself and that he's actually 200 years old. Elliott has been at every point in history where people had mustaches.
Right. And I think he was born looking exactly the way
he for sure was.
Like, that's how long his mustache was. That's how tall he was.
Yeah.
He was just, it's fantastic. I love it when he does Sam Elliott things that he just kind of walks around and like gets all grizzled and just like, you know.
Well, and again, that's the joy of this movie is that everybody in it, you're like, holy shit, it's that guy. And everyone, you know, plays their part fairly well. Again, sure. There are, I would say, variances in the acting ability. Dana Delaney, I still think, is weak. I mean, the female performers in the movie in general are kind of weak. And I say that knowing that, A, there's only maybe three of them.
Sure.
And B, they are given nothing to do. So it is not, this is not a commentary on the ability of women to act versus men, because that's stupid. This is a very testosterone-fueled,
yes,
macho movie with no time or interest in women.
Yes.
To the point where it tries to fake it and feels totally artificial. I mean, all this stuff. That's, again, the trying to soften Wyatt Earp and suggest that he has this heart that's capable of love. maybe he probably did. Again, he was with this woman for 50 years, according to the end of the movie. Also, Tom Mix wept. So I'm sure that's true. He was married. He is somebody who could, you know, maintain a relationship, sort of. But the Wyatt Earp that we are presented does not seem the romantic type.
Yeah, is really cutthroat and practical and just is really interested in money more than anything else.
Yeah.
I think even the thing where he is concerned about his family is just kind of tacked on top of it. It's like, oh, brothers. Only because, like, I think he's more concerned with money and like just his own comfort and all this other stuff.
Which could be interesting again if the movie is about him realizing, oh, that's a futile pursuit. This stuff is more important. But it really seems like we're presented with a Wyatt Earp who doesn't want to get back into that life.
Sure.
And then the first time someone is like, nope, I'm in, he's like, all right, then I will be too.
Yeah.
And so his arc doesn't totally work as well as I think it could.
He's
very quick to just be like, yeah, all right, I'll kill some people.
He's very like cranky old man about things. I kind of, again,
the whole time, like from the beginning to the end, he's not all that different. He's except always for when he dances in the street.
Yeah, he's... He's always irritated that, like, it's like, oh, you're doing that. Like, he's got the disposition of, you're doing that wrong. Morgan, you're doing it reversal.
Right, which,
you're
again, would be okay.
Maddie, you're doing it
if
wrong.
If the movie's point of view was, this guy is difficult and kind of a prick, and we don't blame people for not liking him. But the movie says, this guy's awesome and right and unkillable.
Sure. And that's what makes me... I mean, I'll always kind of like this movie a lot. I still do, by the way. I hope that kind of came across.
I enjoy it too. Yeah.
It's just fun to poke at because it's a little silly.
Because it's ridiculous at times. Other times, it's super awesome.
How many times do you think you've watched this movie?
15.
I would say more than 10 for me. I think less than 15. But I think
how have I seen it more times than you?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Why have I seen Tombstone 15 times?
I don't know. It just happens. You watch everything more than me, generally. I don't know if there's a movie that I've watched more than you have.
Memories of a Murder.
Yeah, that's true.
You
burnt. Patrick.
Me.
And watching it 14 other times. What was I going to talk about? I totally forgot. Oh, jeez.
Do you like Westerns?
I do. Actually, this is the direction I was going to go.
All right.
You keep going.
You're welcome. No, that was it. Do you like, I was going to ask if you like Westerns. And sure. If so, how do you feel like this movie measures up?
I think part of what makes it difficult is that I don't feel like I'm super well...
Versed.
That's what I want to say.
You're welcome
in
again.
Westerns. Yeah, sorry. You're welcome. Like, you know, I've seen High Noon and that's great. But I felt like there's so many movies that I haven't seen. I haven't seen The Searchers, and so I'm like, sorry, everybody. So I can only compare to sort of modern things. And I think this is the comment that I wanted to make earlier, which was that Tombstone always has a special place in my heart a little bit, just because it was just whatever, this movie that my friends and I sort of bonded over, and like, we're like, yeah, that's what it's like to be a man. I wish I had a mustache and a rifle and a doped up girlfriend. But Braveheart was sort of different. That's like when we wanted swords and painted ourselves blue. But I think in terms of what's funny is that the other Wyatt Earp movie with the Costner one, even though I was sort of complaining about it, that it was just too dark and moody and just sort of glum all over the place. What's funny is that the Westerns, the more recently made ones that I like now, are more of that tone.
Okay.
You know, I'm thinking of, I liked 310 to Yuma, the remake. I really loved The Assassination of Jesse James,
yes,
by the coward Neil.
Holy cow.
I forgot the name of the coward guy.
Robert Ford.
Robert Ford, thank you. I really love that movie.
Yeah.
And so, but it's funny because the tone of those movies is much closer to the Costner Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, like, I would say 310 to Yuma is more Tombstone than it is.
Sure.
Earp. But yeah.
It's funny to say Earp.
Jesse James is definitely. Yeah, I mean, there's probably only 15 or 20 sort of classic Westerns made since, you know, 1990.
Sure.
So this certainly ranks.
I gotta think, what are some other Westerns? Like, those are two big ones I think most people would think of. What are some other Westerns?
I mean, jumping from, like, Unforgiven.
Oh,
like,
that's right.
That would be
How
one.
How did I forget Unforgiven?
I'm not real sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Texas Rangers? Starring James Vanderbeek and Ashton Kutcher?
Stop
like,
it.
Tombstone is better than Texas Rangers.
Yes.
By the way, I don't even hate Texas Rangers.
How many times have you seen Texas Rangers?
Only once. Opening night. American
should count,
Outlaws.
Should count for 10.
Which I did not see.
How do you feel about Young Guns?
I'm a fan of Young Guns.
I'm a fan of Young Guns as well. I feel like that's the kind of pop Western that Tombstone is.
Yeah, oh yeah, way more.
For
it's
sure.
Way more about being a movie Western than it is about the Old West.
Got it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like informed by people who have watched Westerns.
Yeah, we did. No, you guys did a Young Guns podcast. Way
Young
back
Guns?
On, right?
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Avatar was the first podcast that ever ran 4 years
a
ago.
A seminal moment in history,
yeah.
Everyone.
Young Guns was the first podcast ever recorded for F This Movie.
What?
Ever. For some reason, we decided to start with Young Guns. Like, hey, we're going to start a movie podcast. What's the movie we should talk about? I know, Young Guns.
A movie that will surely survive the test of time.
Right? Young Guns 2, that came out. I still haven't seen Appaloosa.
I've seen that one.
Okay.
That was, I found it a little disappointing.
Okay.
Because maybe just I was not prepared for it, but that's a little more on the glum side.
Okay.
It's the Unforgiven kind of
sort
of vibe to it.
Did you ever see Open Range?
No, I didn't.
It's really good.
Okay.
Kevin Costner, Robert Duvall. I really like that one.
The Quick and the Dead.
Quick and the Dead, the Sam Raimi one?
I kind of like it.
It's
I enjoyed it.
It's entertaining. I'll tell you, when I saw that movie, I was
surprised how much I liked it.
I was like in high school and I
sure
didn't. It's kind of same with Darkman. Like, I was almost too young, and I was old enough to know better. But again, high schoolers now can be way more movie savvy, I feel like, than we were able to be when we were in high school. And maybe that's unfair. But like, I didn't quite understand what it was he was going for, you know?
Sure.
And I've grown to like Westerns more since I first saw The Quick and the Dead. But I hadn't seen so many sort of Leone Westerns, and I didn't. All the zooms and the craziness. I'm like, what's he going for? This is weird. It was the same as I had my first reaction to Darkman, and then the more movies I saw and the more movies that I saw that he was referencing and the more I started to like get Sam Raimi. I certainly think that movie's entertaining now. I don't think it's great. I probably like Tombstone better.
Sure.
Although they both sort of are in the same ballpark.
Right. I think I had something. Appaloosa was just, it just just what I felt like it could have been really good, but yeah. It just wasn't. It's okay.
Yeah.
But I think you might end up, like, you might come away feeling a little, that it was a little flat. Okay. That it was a little bland.
And again, it really depends on what you want out of Westerns. If you want sort of this meditation on the passing of a way of life, you should watch, you know, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. If you really just want, like, dudes with guns and hats and mustaches, Tombstone is your Huckleberry.
Sure.
Because it will give you all of those things.
A pair of fellow sophisticants.
Yeah, it just gives you a bunch of character actors that you like, and also John Corbett killing each other.
Yeah.
And I think it wasn't until watching it this time that I realized that John Corbett was...
Yeah.
In the movie.
He was hidden underneath all that facial hair.
Yeah, right.
Which was very authentic.
And of course, dies.
Yeah.
I had something else that I was going to say about a modern Western, and I don't remember what it was.
Was it about the Western movie where it was all ladies, and what's-her-face was
it? Bad Girls?
Madeline Stowe. Seen it.
Madeline Stowe, Mary Stuart Masterson.
Drew Barrymore.
And Andy McDowell. Because when you think Lady Cowboy, you think Andy McDowell.
Yeah.
Not a fan of that movie.
No, not either. I just sat through it because it was silly and it was just on TV and I decided to stick with it.
That's all it takes. There's an Australian Western made a couple years ago called The Proposition.
No, I haven't seen it.
Very good.
Nice.
Written by Nick Cave and Guy Pearce, Ray Winstone, and Danny Houston, maybe?
Okay.
Really good. Might be on Netflix, but... Probably isn't, but definitely worth seeking out.
Sorry, this might be too far afield. What's a movie that Guy Pearce is going to be in this coming year?
The one with Robert Pattinson?
Yes.
I don't remember the name of it.
Super dystopian. It just reminded me because it feels like a Western a little bit. In terms of there's a chase and there's sort of lawlessness, but it's set in the future.
It's not John Hillcoat, is it?
I don't remember.
Directing? Okay, I don't either.
I don't remember.
John Hillcoat made The Proposition and then made The Road.
That's right up his alley.
And then made that other one that I did not like last year. Lawless? 2 years ago?
Oh, yes.
Not
with
a fan of Lawless.
Tom Hardy.
And Shia LaBeouf.
The Boof. What are you going to do this weekend? I'm hanging out with The Boof.
Did not love Lawless.
I didn't either.
No.
Tom Hardy's horrible, wasted.
Yeah.
Modern, you were going to say something about modern Western.
I think it was just The Proposition that I meant to bring up. The Proposition. Okay. And then
nice.
And then I did, and now it's done.
Nice.
Are we spent on Tombstone?
Do you have a favorite scene? I know we talked about some of our favorites, but do you have a favorite?
I don't know that I do. Again, I like some of the shootouts. I don't think I have a favorite because it's always like a line here or there. It all has to do with Val Kilmer. And I love Kurt Russell. Like, I definitely would consider Kurt Russell one of my very favorite actors.
Sure.
He's pretty one note in this movie.
Yes. It's very shrill.
I mean, he's steely and determined, which is fine, and he does that well. But one of the things that I love about Kurt Russell is the sense of fun that he often has as an actor, that he gives a great performance, but he's also sort of sometimes in on the joke. And you know, that obviously depends on if there is a joke. You think of, like, Big Trouble in Little China. Even something like Snake Plissken, where he's playing an escape from New York, there's kind of a wink to the whole thing.
So
right.
Good.
The Thing, obviously, he's in a different mode.
Yeah.
But he's always great, and he's not bad in Tombstone, but it just seems one of his less inspired performances.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that Kevin Costner is much better in Wyatt Earp.
No.
And he's
so
the whole
long.
Show in that movie,
so
right.
Just,
but Kevin Costner, I think, is more limited than Kurt Russell.
That was an amazing run by Costner, where it's like the anti-McConaughey.
He could not stop making three-hour epics.
Just was so... And I kept on, you know, because I'd bought into him just with Dancers with Wolves and, you know, whatever, all the baseball movies, and I was like, okay, I'm in for this, but
yeah.
Just
no.
The Postman,
listen,
freaking Wyatt Earp.
I've seen The Postman more than once.
That's not...
I don't
why.
Hate it. I don't hate it.
Why? You have children.
That's kind of a Western.
Okay. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. better than Texas Rangers or no? I don't know. I don't hate The Postman.
Okay.
And I'm on record as being a fan of Waterworld.
I'm still unconvinced.
So
I'm
suck
still
it.
Unconvinced. I'm not going to watch it.
No,
I was okay with Waterworld, actually.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
It's not.
It's like Tombstone.
Yeah.
It's like,
I think I have much more affection for Tombstone just because it's a little bit more
light-hearted. So. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah. All right, I guess that's it for Tombstone, everyone.
Okay.
Again, we like the movie. Again, people hold this movie really dear, and I started out by saying people love this movie, and I know a lot of people really love Tombstone, and I certainly did not. I do not want to take anything away from that. I like this movie a lot. I will watch it whenever it's on TV.
Absolutely.
I just also happen to find some of it kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's that Chronicles of Riddick category of movies that's so, so watchable but isn't super great.
Right.
I love it. I love it. It's so good.
All right. Well, thanks, Mark.
All right. Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you guys for listening. We will see you next week. Mike is coming back, and we're continuing our Bond series.
Ooh.
With Live and Let Die.
Nice.
Which will happen to coincide with Blaxploitation Day.
Nice.
In June'sploitation, which makes sense because this is Bond's Blaxploitation movie.
Nice.
So thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next week
with Frederick fucking Chopin.